What's up, everyone? This is Anthony Pompliano. Most of you know me as Pomp. You're listening to the Pomp Podcast, simply the best podcast out there. Now let's kick this thing off.
PJ Kev is an entrepreneur, an investor, and the founder of Approved Jets. In this conversation, we get an update on the private jet market. We also talk about Afrobeats, crypto in various African countries, what exactly is going on in Ghana and Nigeria specifically, and why PJ Kev is so excited about continuing to build, invest, and visit his home country of Ghana. I really enjoyed this conversation, as always, with PJ, and I hope that you guys remember that PJ Kev is your number one source for all private jet needs. He's always been a great friend of mine, and I know that you guys love when he comes on the show. So here is my conversation with PJ Kev. This episode is brought to you by Arculus. If your cryptocurrencies are stored on an exchange, they may not be secure. And as we've just seen, your crypto can be lost in the blink of an eye to a freeze, exchange bankruptcy, or malfeasance. Now more than ever is the time to keep your crypto safe and secure in the Arculus cold storage wallet. Arculus knows a thing or three about security. Your assets are accessible through three-factor authentication and by using the Arculus Wallet app and Arculus Key Card. Your keys are generated and encrypted on their secure element rated CCEALP6+. If you don't know what that means you and only you own your keys and therefore your crypto. Keep your digital assets secure and safe from exchange freezes, bankruptcies, and hacks with Arculus. Save 20% through December 10th with promo code POMP. Go to Arculus and use promo code POMP today. This episode is brought to you by Messari. Your days of spending hours scouring the internet for quality crypto insights are over. Messari is your one-stop shop for all your crypto data and research needs. With Messari Pro, you can gain access to exclusive, industry-leading, long-form daily research reports, daily crypto news, advanced asset screeners, and curated sets of charts and protocol metrics. If you try Messari Pro today, listeners of the Pomp Podcast can get up to 25% off their Messari Pro membership by visiting www.messari.io/pomp or enter promo code POMP at checkout. That's www.messari.io/pomp and use promo code POMP. This episode is brought to you by Unstoppable Domains. They've partnered with blockchain.com to create NFT domain names ending in .blockchain. It's the perfect ending to show that you're a believer in a decentralized future. The blockchain.com community can join a short waitlist to get one for free at blockchain.com/waitlist/blockchain domain. Free NFT domains provide all the benefits of premium unstoppable domains, including fee-free lifelong ownership. If you don't have a blockchain.com wallet, no worries. There's new free domains available to everyone. Either join the waitlist for a free blockchain.com domain or visit unstoppabledomains.com to buy your domain today, starting as low as $5. Unstoppabledomains.com.
Anthony Pompliano runs Pomp Investments. All views of him and the guests on his podcast are solely their opinions and do not reflect the opinions of Pomp Investments. You should not treat any opinion expressed by Pomp or his guests as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of his personal opinion. This podcast is for informational purposes only.
All right, guys. What's up? Bang, bang. PJ Kev in the house. What's up, man?
I'm pretty good. How you feeling?
How is the private jet business doing? That's what I want to talk about first. It was flying.
It was flying.
In 2021, everyone was flush with cash. Everyone was getting rich. Everyone wanted a private jet. People were renting jets. They were buying jets. Yeah. You came in. You were explaining the whole thing. I was like, damn, all these dudes got jets. They must be rich. A year later, a little different story sounds
way
like.
Way different story. I mean, people are still flying. It's still been sort of busy. Okay. I think right now it's probably down about 20%.
Okay.
From what it was last year.
Same type of people are still renting jets, just 20% less of them, or has it changed a little?
It has changed a little bit.
Okay.
People are more conservative now when it comes to just spending on jets. You know, they're now looking in, you know, first class options and things like that. But it is busy around this time.
They got less cash. They got to look where it's going.
Right. It is busy around this time because of holidays. Mm-hmm. So it always picks up from, I would say, like, beginning of November to, mm-hmm. like, the end of, like, you know, January to February.
Okay.
And then it slows down again.
How have prices changed? Because there's 20% less demand. Have prices come down 20% or not
to
really?
To be honest with you, prices hasn't come down yet. Okay. We're still waiting for, I mean, fuel has come down a little bit. I think it's down about 10 to 15%. Mm-hmm. But
how much does it cost to go from Miami to, let's say, New York City right now?
right now on a G4, you probably cost about anywhere from like $26,000 to $30,000.
Okay.
On like a midsize, it'll be anywhere between like 12 to like 18, mm-hmm. around that range. But you know, before, I remember when New York to Miami was $15,000, you know, to $17,000 on a G4.
Mm-hmm. So we so haven't like doubled basically.
Yeah. So we haven't seen that yet, but it's definitely coming down, I'll say. You know, right. Slowly but surely, it'll come down.
And then at one point, people were asking to pay in Bitcoin or cryptocurrency. Are right. they doing that shit now or no?
No.
Straight dollars.
Straight dollars. Yeah, I mean, you know, with everything going on in cryptocurrency, a lot of people just decided to, you know, just transfer their money out into like USDT or USDC and just hold.
Yep.
You know, before I was accepting Bitcoin, Ethereum, and, you know, other coins. I'm like, nah.
So you won't even accept the other stuff now?
I'm just right now just USDT or USDC. Mm-hmm. I won't accept BTC or Ethereum right now.
What percentage of customers are paying in stable coins versus, like, just traditional dollars?
Well, for me, well, last year compared to now, it was probably about 40% of people was paying with crypto.
Wow.
You know what I mean? A lot of people was paying with crypto. Now, I mean—
nothing.
Nobody, yeah.
Yeah, nobody.
So.
And then has there been a change in like where people are flying from or to? Have you seen like an increase in certain cities or a decrease in certain cities?
No, not really. But I think it's all about, you know, what's going on in different. I mean, people are still coming down to Miami. Miami mm-hmm. has not really changed. I see a lot of people now flying into like Aspen a lot. But that always been like a busy city. Mm-hmm. Hasn't really changed as much.
Mm-hmm. And so this is all renting jets. What Correct. About the price of the private jet? Like if someone wanted to buy an actual plane, has that changed at all?
Yes, people actually are still looking to buy to take advantage mm-hmm. of the tax credit, believe it or not. But I think, you know, next year the tax bracket turns until 80%. So it'll be
so you won't be able to write off 100%
yeah,
of it.
It'll be like 80%. Yes, it'll be an 80% depreciation. So people are still trying to take advantage of that. 100%.
They're trying to rush in before the end of the year?
Right. Trying to rush in before the end of the year. It's not much availability out there. I think mm-hmm. that will open up next year mm-hmm. sometime in the first quarter. Mm-hmm. Just a lot of people are trying to get rid of their assets and things like that, doing to the market. But yeah, it's been a steady race. You know, it's yeah. been steady.
And you spent a lot of time in Africa as right. well. Talk a little bit about what you guys are doing there and like, why are you so interested in Ghana?
Well, I'm from Ghana, and I believe that's going to be like the leading, you know, destination, such as like the Ibiza for Africa. I believe, you know, when it comes to entertainment, when it comes to real estate, I believe like the demand is just going higher and higher and higher. So for me personally, I decided to build apartment complexes in Ghana. So I already built one, 12 units in basically a West Legon area in Ghana. And I'm now just basically just focusing on real estate out there right now. I think, you know, the demand of, you know, people wanting to go back home just to, you know, see Africa, to visit Africa, to figure out where they're from, their heritage. You know, a lot of people were going there to see like the Cape Coast Castle and see like how the slaves were enslaved and things like that with the history. So a lot of people are going to Africa, believe it or not, just to get that sense of like history, that belief, or they just want to party.
Yeah. So talk to me about in Ghana specifically, how similar or different is it than Nigeria? Nigeria is the only country that really like I would consider from a Western perspective that I've gone to that people would be like, if they say they're going to Africa, right? Nigeria. And when I went to Lagos, one of my big takeaways was that people are so happy there.
Yeah.
Right. And especially yeah. when you come from the Western world and then you go and you see Nigeria, like you're like, man, this is so different than a New York City, a Miami or whatever, just in terms of infrastructure, the way people live, like all this stuff. Mm-hmm. But damn, are these people happy? And yeah. like, there's just like, it sounds stupid, but like, there's like a vibe to it.
Right.
Right. And you're kind of like, yo, I like this place.
Right.
Right? Is Ghana very similar to that?
Ghana is similar to that. People okay. are happy, but Ghana's more chilled than,
oh, interesting.
Than Nigeria. I think Nigeria is kind of like the New York City.
Yeah.
And I would say like Ghana is more like a LA mixed with a Miami, if okay. that makes sense. Because they definitely still like to party. You yeah, know what yeah. I mean? Everybody loves to party.
I've seen your Instagram stories.
Yeah, we love to party. But it's more chilled and more relaxed. And people are happy, you know, mm-hmm. believe it or not. Even though they have little, they have, you know, not as much as we have in the Western world. Mm-hmm. It's just like an energy that we just have that we just, I don't know, we just happy creatures. Mm-hmm. We just, you know, I think it's, of course, it's the weather. I always say, like, anywhere is, like, hot, people are, like, more nice. But mm-hmm. just our culture, we just more, like, you know, just happy people.
Mm-hmm. And then when you say it's more entertainment, this is like nightclubs and music venues?
Or yeah, like the nightclubs, scene? You have festivals, a lot of festivals going on. I actually own a festival out there with my partners called Upfest in Ghana right now. And yeah, just a lot of people just, you know, want to party. So there's a nightclub scene. You have the restaurant scene that's going crazy now in Ghana, which is kind of like, that's like a new brunch vibe and party vibe that, you know, a lot of people are like, you know, going to. But yeah, there's a lot of festivals going on. Just to name a few, Afrochella, you have Afro Nation. You have
Afrochella's a thing?
Yeah, Afrochella's a thing.
I like that.
Yeah, shout out to them. They're my peoples. They're really, really cool. But yeah, so like we, you know, we are just trying to bring, you know, people back home and to like realize that, you know, not only Africa is a place where you can live and where you can reside at, but you can also do business.
Mm-hmm. How much of Ghana's like rise in popularity, business, economic impact, maybe in Nigeria as well, is what I'll call natives who never left versus natives who left and now are coming back versus somebody who actually never has lived or was born in one of these countries?
To be honest with you, the natives that left and came back are the people that are thriving the most.
They're driving a lot of this.
Yes, they're driving a lot of this.
Okay.
Now, the natives that live there personally, they are basically trying to adjust to the new change because they've been stuck in their ways for just so long. Mm-hmm. And then mostly, it's just like a referral. So like if I go to Ghana and I tell you like, hey, I know that we can make, you know, X amount of dollars doing this real estate flip. And you're like, okay, what, really? Have you done it before? Yes. I show you the numbers. You're like, well, these numbers are really, really impressive. And then you come back and you bring your team. So I think it's just basically everybody just sharing information. Mm-hmm. And that's just so important right now. Just the information that you receive when you go to Ghana. And it's all about who you go to Ghana with. That's super important as well.
Explain that more.
So who you go to Ghana with is super important because you get to see different perspectives of, like for me, if I take you to Ghana, yes, I'm going to show you the entrepreneur way. I'm going to show you different business ventures that you can get into. But I'm also going to show you the nightlife. I'm also going to show you the festivals. I'm also going to introduce you to people that are really moving and shaking in Ghana. Mm-hmm. Now, if you go to someone that just wants to have a good time, all you're going to do is spend money and just have a good time. Mm-hmm. So it's a different perspective that you get the outlook of Ghana when you actually go there with different people.
And how much is this like most countries I've been to where there's urban areas, there's rural areas, there's kind of the business area of a city? Like, is it very similar in that sense, or is it more kind of flat and there's less maybe contrast between you know, the most extremes of wealth and poverty within a country?
Yeah, I mean, places like Ghana and Nigeria, you are going to see a significant wealth gap. Mm-hmm. I think now it's changing to somewhat of a middle class because a lot of people from, you know, Europe and a lot of people from America is actually moving back. Mm-hmm. So you still have that, like, that middle class, but you do see it is a large wealth gap, right?
There's a large wealth gap in the United States too, right?
Right.
But I think part of what people from the Western world, we're ignorant. Like, we don't, if you've never gone, I've never gone to Ghana. I don't know what it's like.
Right.
And so there's almost this like perception, whether it's from the media or things you read online or whatever. And so you, the more that you can understand, hey, it's probably more similar than different
in
a lot of ways. I think it helps people realize like we're all human.
Right.
The human experience is pretty similar.
And
I guess like, is remote work and like online businesses and stuff, is that having a big impact or not really?
Yeah, actually right now, a leading industry that I've been looking to get into is the fintech industry. Mm-hmm. That's been having a serious, serious impact in just Africa, period. But online businesses are starting to come out there. I mean, Twitter had their headquarters in Ghana for a while before the shutdown. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, you do have businesses that's looking to jump into the African space. I think that, you know, we're not there yet, but in the future, for sure, we'll definitely get there.
Mm-hmm. And are there people who are moving back from the United States or kind of other places, whether it's in Europe or the Western world, and they're saying, hey, I'm going to keep working at these large tech companies, but I'm just going to do it back from Ghana? Or is that not so much what people are doing?
Yeah, you have a percentage of people that actually are doing that. I think COVID really helped people to understand that you can really work effectively from home. Right. Mm-hmm. So you can live anywhere as long as you have Wi-Fi and, you know, you have the time schedule because, you know, we're 6 hours ahead in Ghana. So long as you have the time schedule that adjusts with your, you know, flexible with your work schedule, you can definitely work anywhere around the world. So most people will say, okay, I will keep the steady income that I have in America, but I will just move to Ghana so I'm able to, number one, take this money that I'm making in dollars and I'm able to scale it because, you know, we have a city right now, we spend money in cities, which is the Ghana currency. If you're making in that in dollars, right, now your dollars is 15 to 1, which is a big gap, right? So now for your $1, you're only spending 15 cities. So, you know, that's a large gap. So now you're able to spend more, do more. You're able to invest a little bit more. And I think that's why most people understand that, okay, if I can continue to make my income, whether it's in the Western world, whether it's in, you know, Europe, whether it's Germany, whatever it is, and I could take that income to Ghana, I could be able to invest more, I can do more things out in Ghana.
Those people are living like kings?
Yeah. I think so, kings
like,
and queens, yeah.
Yeah, like what is the person who, let's just say, has like an average tech salary? I don't know, maybe $150,000 probably is like the average salary across all, you know, levels of seniority plus roles. What does that buy you in Ghana? Like, are you like, yo, I got a 12-bedroom mansion. I got, you know, a full staff. I got, you know, 6 cars. Like,
I mean, to be honest with you, Ghana is coming pretty expensive. So yeah. If you, like, basically the equivalent to someone here making, you know, 60 to 80,000 in Ghana, U.S. dollars can take you a long way, right? But Don't get it twisted. Ghana now are charging in U.S. dollars. So, you know what I mean? You have to really, I mean, it all depends on your lifestyle as well, mm-hmm. too, right? But, I mean, you do have to make a significant amount of money to live in Ghana, even though, you know, they still make it work with the little that they have, which is so impressive when you see it. Like, I can buy, you know, with 100 cities, I can buy my food, I can use it for transportation, and I could save a little bit. I don't know how they do it, but they do it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But to your point, you don't need to make a substantial amount of money to live there, but you do have to, I would say, at least make 50K a year so you can live comfortable, right?
I mean, and that's a big number, right? Even in the United States, that's higher than the average salary. And so it's not, quote unquote, dirt cheap, as there's a lot of people in America who would say, oh, I'm gonna move to Thailand or, you know, pick your place around the world that people seem to gravitate towards because they think it's, you know, incredibly inexpensive.
Right.
This doesn't sound like it's that, but you can make a decent living and also kind of have the nice things in life as well.
For sure. Yeah, for sure.
Talk to me about the music. I was telling you earlier that in 2016 maybe or so, I went to Nigeria and I met CK.
Mm-hmm.
He was not CK that he is now. Mm-hmm. I've seen his rise and it's been incredible to watch kind of from afar. And now he's doing, you know, multi-country tours and like all stuff. But his music, there's kind of a whole genre of like Afro beats.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple of these different genres or artists that seem to be blowing up on the global stage. What's driving that?
I think, to be honest with you, the sounds that we are hearing now, you know, we in Africa, we like to use a lot of instruments, mm-hmm. right? So I think the instruments that we're using is gravitating to the vibe and to like the uplifting music. You know, Afrobeats, I call it, I think it's uplifting music where it allows you to dance again, it allows you to feel good. So that energy with the instruments and like the live band, I think all that came from Africa, which is transitioning to the Western world. But I kind of knew it was already going to be like this when it comes to like music-wise, because I already seen the transition when I was traveling to London, when I was going to Dubai, and I started to like hear Afrobeats. I was like, okay, the next, you know, the next real music shift has to be Afrobeats. Mm-hmm. And people like Burna Boy, DeVito, and Wizkid has basically changed that sound to uplift the music mm-hmm. and made people like, even though if you don't understand the words, it makes you feel good. You know what I mean? And that's super duper important, especially this day and age where, you know, you kind of want to have uplifting music so you could go about your day a little bit better. So I think that just comes with like the instruments, that comes with like the different sound, and people are like just, I guess, getting tired of like the same old kind of music that they've been hearing for over the past years.
Mm-hmm.
They want to hear something new, and that Afro beats and that Afro fusion is just like taking over.
Yeah. Is it, almost sounds like the music geographically moves, right? Like it starts in Africa on the continent, and then all of a sudden it ends up in Europe and London, Dubai, like, you know what I mean? And then you're like, hey, it's going to migrate to the US. Is there something to that, or is that just me being an idiot?
It's just people. It's people just transitioning. Like, you come to Ghana, right? But you don't live in Ghana. You go back to London. You tell a friend, hey, I just heard this new CK song. I just heard this new Burna Boy song, Wizkid song. Take a listen to it. They like it. And it's just like, especially with social media around, like, you could get the music out way faster. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Why? So,
because of just a lot of people are tuning into what new sound is coming out. Mm. So, you know, when you hear like a Burna Boy Last Live with a sample on it, you know what I mean? It's like, oh shit, I could relate to it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And it's like, it's just now, like, it's just transitioning. You know what I mean? It's just like, I mean, look what Wizkid did with Essence. It was like a global hit. Everybody was playing that song. So I think
there's a number of songs like this in this kind of broader genre that when I've seen them blow up, I've said to a friend, like CK is the one that I think I've paid attention to the most just because I'd met him. And I said, oh, do you know who that is? And like, nah. And I'll play the song and like, oh, I heard that before.
Exactly.
And so it's interesting how in the US, people may be like, they may know the artist, but they don't actually know the song. Here it almost is in reverse.
Yeah. I think that will change soon. You know what I mean? That's just repetitive. You know, they got to hear it more. They got to put a face to a name. Mm-hmm. That will change soon.
Who are the big artists right now that you're like, if you were a betting man, who are like four or five artists that you're like, yo, these are the people who are going to blow up?
I think right now I would say Burna Boy. He's did amazing. He's doing amazing still. Wizkid, DeVito. Is a Nigerian artist called Askay.
Okay.
He's doing really, really amazing, like, new sounds. And to be honest with you, South African artists, I don't know all their names, but they're blowing up too as well. Yeah, they have a new sound called Amo Piano. And like, when I went to Ghana, I started like hearing this like new like instrument, kind of like whistle blowing, and like, it's crazy how like that scene is actually blowing up as well. But yeah, just to name a few, I think, you know, it's definitely more out there in Ghana, like the Stone Boys and other people that blowing up as well. But, you know, just to name a few, but it's a lot of people that's channeling into this direction of music, and I think they will do definitely well in the future.
How much of this is similar to the United States? So I watched a documentary. I'm dangerous. I got the internet, right? So I watched a documentary. I think it is the home or like the creation point of drill music. Mm-hmm. All comes from Chicago, from I think O Block is what people call it, right? Mm-hmm. And it was basic. From what I understood, it was like five or six friends that each kind of blew up individually, somewhat in sequence, but it came out of gang battles, essentially, right? Like, there was one project versus another project that was close by, and actually one of the first songs that blew up and one of the guys went on a global tour off of was like basically a battle cry for this block versus the other.
Yeah, Chief Keef. I think it was Chief Keef.
Yeah, and so like when you see that, you're like, oh shit. And in the documentary, they said, they're like, yo, basically there's a bunch of white kids who were all singing this like battle cry for a gang in Chicago.
Yeah.
And they had no clue because they were just going to a concert. They liked the music, whatever. But what struck me was like, there was five or six, 10, however many it was, all in one neighborhood. And there's like a probability aspect to it, right? Mm-hmm. Of just like, hey, I was born here. I never left here. We're all friends.
Right.
You're 16. I'm 14. That guy's 21, whatever. You pop, he pops, I pop. Like, next thing you know, this music is global.
Right.
Is that what's happening here too? Is like these people all grew up together, or is it maybe not as serendipitous?
Well, not as serendipitous like how you said, but basically like more of just coming from, you know, it's almost 200 million people in Nigeria, mm-hmm. right? So
we'll be more than the United States by 2050.
Yeah. It's a lot of people in Nigeria. It's a lot.
A lot of young people.
A lot of young
with
people.
Internet access that understand how to use mobile phones.
Exactly. So they're coming from Nigeria, and I think drill music actually started in London. When I used to go to London, like in 2017, 2018, I used to hear that drill music. I just didn't really like. It wasn't really my favorite kind of music. So I didn't really like listen to it. But drill music actually, I think, started from London. And then it transitioned to, you know, the Western world again. I think everything always starts first, like overseas, mm-hmm. right?
Really? Why do you think that is?
I don't know, because when I usually like hear stuff first when I go overseas than, you know, the Western world. I don't know if they have.
You're saying Americans don't have good taste?
No, I'm not. I just think the producers are different. I think, you know, it comes with like the society. I think it just all that plays a factor, mm-hmm. right? But from my understanding, the music out of Nigeria and South Africa are the leading music right now because they have positioned themselves to market to the world. Mm. I think Ghana, we Ghanaians, you know, as, you know, Ghanaian artists, they have trouble of marketing to the world. Now, they're popular in Ghana. Don't get it twisted. They're really, really popular in Ghana. But to the world, I think they lack that marketing.
What do you think is like the, if you could wave a magic wand and change, what would help them be able to be globally recognized?
To be honest with you, it just comes with a strategic, you know, online presence, doing more shows internationally, and just connecting with, you know, producers all around the world and not just in Africa.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, if I could change anything, I'll just be saying, hey, I'll just start up a marketing company and say, hey, I like to market African, you know, artists to America.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll be the company there. But, you know, I'm not really position right now to jump into the music industry. I will pretty soon. Mm-hmm. I just have a lot on my plate, but I'm thinking about definitely helping out in the music industry in some way.
How much of the dream, if you will, if you're a music artist in one of these African countries, is to get out of that country and get into the U.S. market, get into the European market, Middle Eastern market, versus there's still, you know, young people who say, hey, if I dominate in Ghana or I dominate in Nigeria, like that is a really important milestone and is I could build a career off of just that. Anything past that may be icing on the cake, but like that's big enough of a market and enough for me to build my career and I'd be happy with that.
I think Africa is definitely big enough a market to build just there.
Mm-hmm.
But I think every artist's dream is to have their music all around the world, mm-hmm. globally, right? You want people in Australia to know you. You want people in Dubai. You want people in America. So I think they look at the American, you know, culture like, hey, this is my dream. And if I make it here, then, you know, I made it. But it is still some artists out there that's dominating Africa in general that's making a killing,
mm-hmm.
and just doing tours around Africa. You know, going to, you know, Tanzania, Kenya, all these places and just dominating. And their sound is really, really their dominant sound. So, yeah, it is to your point, you know, you have different aspirations and dreams for artists, but I think every artist wants their music globally, you know what mm-hmm. I mean, to be have a global sound.
Mm-hmm. How do they make money? Is it the same ways that here in the U.S., touring, merchandise, streaming, things like that?
So I know they're still trying to figure out the streaming out there, but a lot of people make money from just touring, mm-hmm. Doing a lot of private events, weddings, mm-hmm. Shows as well. It's crazy because I'm thinking about it now. They haven't really tapped into like the merchandise and like online,
mm-hmm.
Not that I know of, but a lot of, you know, artists out there have, you know, some very, very big endorsements, and they make a lot of money from endorsements out there as well. Yeah, I think they haven't really tapped into the online. That's mm-hmm. pretty interesting because I haven't really seen that.
Yeah. I'm assuming is a big piece of U.S.-based artists, right?
Right.
Is basically you got your touring, you got your streaming revenue, but then you probably, and maybe you got like some YouTube or something, which is kind of streaming, but really it's like, hey, can you sell things to your audience,
right?
Whether that's merchandise or other things. And so having a website, being able to go direct, all that stuff,
yeah.
especially for the independent artists, is like a huge piece of it.
Right. And I think endorsements too help as well. You yeah. know what I mean? A lot of people that want to channel these, you know, corporations mm-hmm. and want to align their brands with, you know, heavy endorsements. I think that helps as well, too.
This episode is brought to you by 8 Sleep. The holiday season is here, so give the never-ending gift of deeper sleep. About 2 years ago, I started to sleep on the 8 Sleep, and I sleep on it every single night. It quite literally changed my life. I get deeper and better sleep, but don't just listen to me. Clinical data shows that 8 Sleep users experience up to 34% more deep sleep. It is not a holiday miracle, even though it sounds like one. If better sleep is on your wish list, look no further than the new Pod 3. You can go to 8sleep.com/pomp for exclusive holiday savings and ring in the most wonderful time of the year. 8 Sleep currently ships with the US, Canada, the UK, and select countries in the EU and Australia. Go check them out, 8sleep.com/pomp today. This episode is brought to you by Valor, which represents what's next in the digital economy. They provide simplified, trusted access in crypto, decentralized finance, and Web3 investment opportunities. Institutions and investors can gain diversified, secure, compliant, and easily tradable access to a diversified set of industry-leading equity products and protocols, all through a single stock purchase on a regulated exchange. They currently are listed in the U.S. under the DEFTF stock ticker and on the Canadian NEO Exchange under DEFI. For more information or to subscribe to receive company updates and financial information, visit their website at valor.com. That's V-A-L-O-U-R.com. This episode is brought to you by LMAX Digital, the number one institutional crypto exchange. They offer clients the deepest pool of liquidity, and they have a 100% uptime track record through all the volatility spikes. LMAX Group's liquidity relationships and ultra-low latency technology means that LMAX Digital is the market-leading solution for institutions across crypto trading and custodial services. LMAX Digital, secure, liquid, and trusted. Go learn more at lmaxdigital.com/pomp. Again, that's lmaxdigital.com/pomp.
What are the business opportunities you see, whether it's in Ghana or kind of broader Africa? If somebody's in Europe, the US, maybe even the Middle East or Asia, South America, wherever, and they're looking and they're saying, hey, I want to go and figure out what these opportunities are, like, what are the big areas where you would tell them to go look?
Definitely real estate, for sure. That's number one. I think real estate is key because it's like a house deficit. And I think it's so much opportunity to build skyscrapers, you know, amusement parks, which I was thinking about doing. So much, you know, undeveloped land that we can, you know, tackle together. Another industry that I've been looking at is the aviculture industry, farming. I think, you know, as far as when it comes to aviculture and food, I mean, that's not going anywhere. So why not be in an industry where you can basically, you know, even if you just focus on feeding, you know, Africa in general, I think that's a great market to go into as well. I'm not too familiar with about the oil and gas industry, but I've been hearing about the oil and gas industry as well, just going back and forth out there. But those top three, I'll say.
What about risks? So when I was in Nigeria, one of the things that I was told by the guy who was kind of taking us around, and he was very clear. He's like, look, this doesn't happen all the time. But he's like, there are definitely situations, especially in oil and gas, where there was kidnappings and all kinds of things that in the United States most people wouldn't think are immediate threats. It happens. Mm-hmm. But I think that people coming from other parts of the world, that's one of the things that is just like the fear of the unknown. Right, same thing in South America or other right. places. If you're not familiar with the culture, you may not know the native language, right? You don't have a network of people. You're like, I don't know. So, like, how do you think about what risks actually exist versus maybe what the thought process of risk would be?
I think that all comes back to who you go out there with and, like, what information that you have before you go into these different type of businesses. I've been hearing a lot of, like, crazy stuff happening in the mining business. So I kind of want to stay away from that. You know what I mean? Yeah, I've been hearing some crazy stuff.
What's the craziest thing you heard? No names.
No names, but I heard that basically they went to a mine together to mine some, I don't know if it was gold or something else, but, and basically they had some people there that was on the mine that they went to and saying that this belongs to them. And the people that they went out there was just like started a fight about whose land was which. And, you know, yeah, it was gold there or whatever it was there, but it's just like, just imagine you going into your mining facility and you trying to mine gold or whatever you're trying to mine, and some people are there saying that, no, that just belongs to them. So just to fight over land, I think you just got to be careful with that. Kidnapping, for sure. You know, I think in Africa, period, you just have to really, really move like low key until you can really position yourself to be out there. But that just goes to show, like, you know, who you go out there with, what kind of, you know, people is around you, what type of information that you have, and just knowing what you're about to get yourself into before you actually do it.
When I was in Nigeria, it happened for sure two times I remember, I think a third time as well, or actually no, three times. When I came in the country, you got to have a paper, and I can't remember if I had a yellow one or a green one, but it basically was all
the vaccines,
the immunizations, all stuff.
Yellow fever, probably.
And whatever color I had, everyone else had the other color, right? So like me and this other guy from America came, two white guys on the plane, right? We're going. We got to the woman who was taking the papers, and she was like, no, stop, like, stand over here. And we stood there for like 25 minutes. And I was like,
yeah.
What, why are we standing here, right? And everyone else is going by.
Yeah.
And then I realized, I was like, oh. I took $20 out. I gave it to her. She's like, all right, go ahead. Right. And I was like, okay, got it. Like, introduction to the country. Yeah, right. And, yeah. And I remember being like, man, like, this place is wild. And then a couple of days later, we were going to dinner. And it was me, my friend, and then our friend who was Nigerian, mm-hmm. and lived in Lagos. And we were in an Uber. And so we got stopped by the police.
Oh, my gosh.
The police officer got in the car, and he was like, pull over here, whatever. He had gotten our friend out or whatever. He like made the Uber driver pull over. He was giving a whole thing. We didn't understand what he was saying. And so at some point, our friend called like a cousin whose dad was like at the police station or something,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
All right, we're good. Like, they let us go. So I'm like, all right, I'm 0-2 in these situations. And then the third one, which I still have the video on my phone, was we were in an Uber coming back. We went to a Y Combinator event in Lagos, which in hindsight was like, that's like a hot spot, yeah, right? Yeah. It's like, hey, anyone who is not from Nigeria, yeah, in the tech industry is going to be at this event. And so I'm sure what they did is they just set up checkpoints, you know, whatever. Yeah. And so when we were leaving, we were in an Uber, mm-hmm. and they stopped us. They made us get out of the car.
Wow.
And like, you know, again, I think I'm intelligent enough to know when you're actually in a dangerous situation versus like someone's just like, hey, you know, you're going to hang out here for a little bit and then we're going to let you go. And it was very much the latter. I never felt like I was in danger or anything, yeah, like that. But they asked for money.
Yeah.
And so my friend and I were like, you know, kind of just like, it's the principle. I don't want to give you any money and, you know, whatever. So I took my phone out and I started recording. But like recording me.
Oh, okay.
And then I turned, I was like, we're getting shaken down or whatever. And these dudes were ducking out of the video. And so they're laughing. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, it was a very friendly situation given the context.
Yeah.
But I remember thinking to myself, I was like, man, this is something that people talk about in the Western world that just like, you don't get stopped by the police and like,
no,
give me $20, right?
Hell no.
But on the flip side, I've been to a lot of countries, India, I've been to all over Eastern Europe, same shit. It is not a unique thing to Nigeria or an African country. Yeah, this is just
normal.
Human nature, yeah. Right?
It's actually a part of the culture, and they don't look at it as how we look at it as.
Correct.
You know what I mean? Like, you just giving money. They look at it as, okay, like, you're supposed to do this.
It's a tax, basically.
It's like, yeah, it's like a tax.
Yeah.
But it is because that the police system out there are so underpaid.
Yes.
Right. And they feel like, you know, they should be paid higher, but it is a tax. Like, you know, you passing through.
In America, we give the government the money and then they give it to the police. Here's a little bit more direct.
You're getting it direct. Yeah.
But the reason why this is so funny is because I have a lot of friends who come from various parts of the world that live here in the United States now. And one of the jokes is always somebody has a relative that when they got to the United States, they got pulled over for, you know, whatever. They didn't use their blinker or they went a little too fast or whatever. Mm-hmm. And they don't realize that's not how America works. And so, like, I have multiple friends who would be like, my uncle or my dad or whoever, like, got pulled over and to me was like, oh, I got a bottle of liquor. Like, I'll just give it to the cop and, like, he'll let me, because that's what you do, yeah, in other countries,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
The cops here are like, bro, that's a bribe.
Yeah. I don't know. You go to jail away.
That's not cool, right?
Yeah.
And so, as far as I know, every single time a friend has told me this story, it hasn't been a bad thing. It's just like, the cop's like, no, like, that's not what we do here. But the cultural differences it's cool because you get to see that different cultures have different kind of mechanisms, different ways how people look at their, yeah, relation to other citizens in their country or their city or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also, it makes it difficult when people go from the Western world to, let's say, Ghana or Nigeria,
yeah,
and vice versa.
Right.
And so it's just, I don't know. It's like an education gap that, right, the more people understand, the less shocking it is when you experience it.
Right. And it's to be honest with you, if you never really experience it, it's hard to tell someone that this is what happens. You know what I mean? So, like, I just tell my friends, like, listen, if the police stop you, you know, if I'm not there, number one, just call me. Let me know, like, you know what I mean? Let me know what's going on. But, like, it's okay to give them money. Mm-hmm. Like, that's not normal. Now, you don't have to give them $100, right? But, yeah, it's a tax.
Yeah.
You know, we don't look at it as, I mean, it is kind of like bribery if you think about it, but it's in African culture, that's normal. That's just,
yeah,
it's just
yeah.
a normal thing. You know what I mean?
It's a tip.
It's like a tip. You know what I mean?
Tip,
like,
sounds better than bribe, yeah. I think, right?
They always say, like in Ghana, like, something small for the boys.
Something small for the boys? That's the saying? Something small for the boys?
Something small for the boys. So, you just, you know.
Yo, when you see me in the streets of Ghana, I got some for all y'all. I like that, though. Because I think it also speaks to the fact that, like, it's not predatory in, like, a malicious way.
Yeah.
Right? To what you're saying is, like, it's almost more cultural and no different. Right now in New York City, we're recording this during the wintertime, and all my friends in New York, you know what they're talking about? Hey, bro, how much money are you giving to the doorman this year? Right? Is it $50, $100, $200? Yeah. What's appropriate? What's not? Damn, I want to give them just enough so that they're not mad, but I also don't want to go broke giving them money. You know, there's like a cultural thing in New York City where the doorman of all of the high-rise buildings, there's an expectation. Mm. If you don't give them money for Christmas, You not getting help. Oh, you need that package? Get your ass down here. Come get it, right? Oh, this, what? And again, I'm exaggerating to a degree, but, like, there's this cultural thing in New York City where the residents of the high-rise buildings give money to the doorman. And many of them do it because they're happy to do it because these people are protecting them. They're helping them. They're, like, doing all this stuff. Mm-hmm. They're probably underpaid, right? Paid, so there's this element of, like, the residents are going to help out, whatever. But until you see it, or until you've lived in a building in New York,
you don't really understand it. Yeah.
Like, what do you mean y'all are all debating on how much money to give the doorman? And then the joke is always like, bro, you think there's like two doorman. And then you realize around Christmas time, like, man, they got like 12 people working.
Yeah, you gotta give them that Christmas gift. And they really, like, the doormans are expecting that. You know what I mean?
100%.
So when we look at it as, you know, it's all jokes, they really expecting that gift. Mm-hmm. And they might use that for their family, whatever they got to use it for, but they really expecting that gift. You know what I mean? We laughing about it, but they like, I'm really expecting to get something. You know what I mean? From
a little something for the boys. That's the greatest phrase I've ever heard.
A little
heard.
Something for the boys. Yeah, that's what they say in Ghana.
All right. So when you think of Ghana specifically, what are some of the things that you think are going to happen over the next couple of years? Like, obviously, you've got businesses there. You got some real estate there. You're spending more time there. Is it something where you're like, okay, here's two milestones, and this is going to be when Ghana kind of arrives on the global stage, or is it a little unclear at the moment in terms of what those milestones would be?
No, it's definitely clear for me. I think, number one, the infrastructure would be at an all-time high just because of how fast they're building now. I think for sure, it'll definitely be the leading, if it's not going to be the leading, but it's definitely going to be the leading entertainment place in Africa, in whole Africa, such as like Ibiza, especially for like December, Easter now is picking up. I think in the next few years, you'll definitely see more major companies come out there and more franchise come out there as well. Mm. They just opened out their first Burger King is out there now. Domino's came out there. KFC is out there. They haven't yet to open a McDonald's yet.
There's no McDonald's?
There's no McDonald's in Ghana.
Damn.
Can you believe that?
Yeah, McDonald's. What's up with that? Is it because McDonald's doesn't want to be there yet? Or is it because Ghana doesn't want McDonald's there?
I don't think they understand the potential yet.
Interesting.
I don't think. I think it's something that, you know, people have tried, but it hasn't been successful.
What about the food? And one of the things I think about is like, Americans are stupid, right? We think everyone likes American food. Mm-hmm. So we're like, hey, let's go take McDonald's and put it all over the world, right? Oh, shit, y'all like coffee? We got Starbucks, right? Like, whatever. There's a lot of places in the world like, get your shitty-ass food out of here. Or another thing I love to do is whenever I travel, you go to the McDonald's in that city, and not because you're trying to get like a cheeseburger, but they actually change some of the items on the menu based on whatever the local culture is.
Totally different menu.
Yeah. And so it's just interesting to me. Like, I remember I went in India and they had a veg and non-veg menus because culturally vegetarian is a huge thing. And, and so like literally it was like laid out that way. And I was like, man, that tells you something about the culture. Now, I didn't get anything because I'm going to go eat real food. But like there's like a data point there.
No, for sure.
So to not have McDonald's there, or at least not have them be popular, I wonder how much of it is like the people don't think that food tastes good or would go and actually eat it versus McDonald's hasn't figured out yet this is a big market opportunity.
I think, I mean, number one, we always eat fresh in Africa, right? Like we have, you know, we typically make our own food, you know, we cook it, it's always going to be fresh, right? But I think just the option to have a McDonald's for like, you know, for the kids to try. Mm-hmm. Like, it's kids out there that never ate at McDonald's. Never had a Happy Meal. Never been to the experience and nothing. No cheeseburger, crazy. No chicken. Think if you think about that, that's kind of crazy, right? So, just having the option to have that. And they can have different recipes. Because you go to McDonald's in, you know, London, India is different from what we have here. They use, like, kind of like the local recipes and mix it up a little bit. You know I went to... One, I think I was in Sweden or Denmark, and they had mustard, and I was like, what is this? It's not a cheeseburger. They had mustard on it. I was like, I'm good. You know what I mean? But, like, it was just, like, different places that I've been around the world, and I kind of, like, analyzed, like, the same thing you do. I analyzed the menu to see, like, okay, why? You know, and I always question myself is that why in these places they have this here, but in America we have that? Right. So, for instance, in Denmark or Sweden, wherever I was at, they had mustard. And I was like, I never had a cheeseburger with mustard on it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, not at McDonald's. And I was like, well, maybe that's what they like here. And that's what people like normalize as, you know, having a cheeseburger. Instead of ketchup, they had mustard. So I was like, oh, shit. So this is like the new thing out there. You know what I mean? Like, for me, I didn't like it because I'm used to like ketchup. Right. But I think, you know, to go back to your point is that we need to just have the option for kids to, you know, try it. You know what I mean? Have the option for if you, whether you like coffee, have a Starbucks there. Just so that, you know, foreigners or anybody come out there, they say, hey, can I go to Starbucks? Yeah, it's Starbucks.
And they got one?
Yeah, they got one. And I cry more. No, they don't have a Starbucks.
Oh, they don't have
one. No. But I'm just saying, if they did have a Starbucks or Dunkin' Donuts, that would be an option for someone like yourself if you love Starbucks. That wants to come to Ghana, you feel more like, okay, feel more at home, you know what I mean, a little bit.
How big is tourism there?
Very big, actually. Very big. Yeah, it's increasing. Now that December has been like the, you know, like the popularized, the place to go is Ghana, a lot of people is coming back. And they're coming back throughout the year because now December prices skyrocket. So you might be able to get a flight in July that's half the cost in December, a round trip.
What is it from like a New York or Miami commercial flight?
Well, New York on Delta, last time I checked, it was about $2,700 one way.
Wow.
Yeah, Ghana's so expensive. It's crazy. We got to talk about that too. Like airlines is...
I mean, with fees and everything, that's like $6,000 just to get there and back.
Yeah, it was expensive. And then I looked at first class and it was like $4,500 to $5,000 one way. So it's about $10,000, especially in December. It's like ridiculous. Stupid. Yeah.
Because the weather is what is like relatively mild December.
Yeah. In December is pretty nice. But just because of the festival season, it picks back up again in like April. Tickets go skyrocket again for like Easter. January kind of tends to be lower. But my question is to the airlines is that why is it so expensive to go to Africa? Is actually more expensive to go to Africa than it is to go to Dubai. And I'm kind of like, I don't understand why is it so, you know, expensive to go there. Is it because they don't have, because I know they have the, you know, they have the fleet to do it, right? I know they have, you know, people booking, just that like their prices is like, you know, skyrocketing.
The same distance?
No, it's actually Dubai is longer.
It's farther.
Further, yeah.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, so it's like, doesn't make any sense when you look at it. Like
you think
that.
There's a conspiracy?
I think that, you know, they, number one, the demand is there. So whatever the prices are, people are going to pay for it. They want to get back home. They want to see their family, you know, bi-coastal, whatever, business. People are going to pay for it. But I just don't understand why is it priced the way it's priced. I would like to have a sit down and, like, talk about that.
Well, people are going to pay. Shit, they're going to raise the prices.
Yeah, but it should be, like...
Unfortunately.
Unfortunately. And it's like, another thing is, too, is only, like, a couple direct flights, which, you know, United now has, you know, direct flights. Delta has direct flights. But there's no other airlines that has direct flights. You either got to stop in London, Amsterdam, Dubai, you know, to go, no, nine hours from New York.
Yeah, that's
9 hours and 30 minutes.
Like, once you get to, like, the nine-hour mark, that's, like, just long enough where you're like, hey, maybe I want to go through London just chill a little.
Yeah. I mean, I did it a couple times nonstop. I was like, shit, I should have stopped. But, yeah, I mean, it's a great place to, you know, a great place to visit, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Family is super safe. Mm-hmm. I think that's another thing that, you know, people are going back there. It's definitely a safe place.
Well, when you say safe, in Lagos, I stayed, so most of the people who are tourists in Lagos, they stay at Victoria Island.
Right.
I stayed on the mainland, maybe like a mile or so from Computer Village.
Okay.
So like further in, and I remember I was a little like, oh shit, did we make a mistake when we first got there the first night?
Yeah.
And we pulled up to the hotel and they had a gate.
Mm-hmm.
And there was armed guys with AK-47 standing at the gate. And I had actually two takeaways. One was like, why do y'all need armed guards standing at the gate, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the second one was like, if somebody comes up here and starts shooting, I don't think you guys appear to be the dudes who are going to be shooting back. Like, it sounds like y'all might run. So, like, now I'm double worried, right?
Yeah.
But there was a sense of, like, safety because there's a big iron gate around the place. There's armed guards, whatever. Like, is it the same thing in Ghana or that's not necessary?
No, it's not necessary in Ghana. Ghana's more, like I said, it's more chilled and calm. Nigeria just have a tense... They're more aggressive than Ghanaians. I'll say that.
Bro, every single Nigerian listens to this is going to be like, no, we're not.
Yeah, but they are. They have a tendency to just being more aggressive. And that's just normal. It's just their cultures, how they grew up.
New York versus LA.
Right. You know what I mean? Just how you grew up, just your culture, just your people around you, just what you know. Right. But they're not bad people, but it's just a little bit, I'll say.
Well, people from LA don't like New York. Right, like living in New York, and people from New York don't really like living in LA because it's a different pace.
I think this, with that being said, is kind of a little bit more dangerous than Ghana. Mm. So people, you see a lot of Nigerians now are flying to Ghana and getting places to live. And I think it's like the poverty gap, you know what I mean? In Nigeria is like bigger than Ghana, so because it's more people.
Yeah. How many people are in Ghana?
24 million last
24?
Time. 24? Yeah.
Okay, so like basically three New York cities.
Yeah.
Right, with all the boroughs and everything.
I'm going to double check.
Something like that.
I'm going to be kind of accurate.
And then what's up with crypto? I think that there's a lot of people in the Bitcoin or crypto
32
industry.
Million, actually.
32.
As of December 22, 32 million.
Oh, wow. So that's like four New York cities, basically.
Yeah.
That's pretty big. There's a lot of people who point to a Nigeria or a Ghana as this is a prime example of a place where these technologies or something like Bitcoin could have a massive positive impact. When you go, what do you see? Do you see people using it? Are they curious but not using it? Like, what's on the ground?
It's actually super, super crazy because on the ground there now, a lot of people are getting accustomed to using crypto. Now, and there's also a lot of people that don't know crypto. So I think just having an acceptable in Africa, like Africa, a lot of people use it to do, like, you know, minor transactions, nothing like major yet. But I think when it comes to that mainstream and, like, it to be accepted by the government, it's just that once they don't know about it, they don't want to accept it. They think it's, like, illegal, you know, things happening, which, you know, crypto is crypto, right? But I think it's definitely, definitely being used a lot in Africa. I mean, especially in Nigeria and Ghana, just because of how quick and swift the transactions go. We have something called mobile money in Ghana where I just need your phone number and I can basically send you money, like how we send Zelle to you, right? But it has like a cap, it has like a limit. But it's pretty impressive when you think about it because they was using that before we was using Zelle.
Yeah, that's kind of crazy.
And that's how they was moving their money around. But now with crypto, where I could be, you know, I could be in New York, I could be in LA, I could be in Miami, and I could just send a transaction and they could receive it instantly, they kind of understand it and seeing how powerful that is, right? So, you know, I'm trying to implement that to real estate and to different businesses to understand that, hey, it's not a bad thing to accept crypto here because, you know, with mobile money, sometimes you're not able to access that large sum of money, you know, from a bank perspective or from, you know, getting your money out perspective. With crypto, you can actually get your money out. I mean, of course, like USDT, you know, the leading ones, but it's impressive. People are using it a lot.
Yeah.
For sure.
And is it mostly young people?
Yeah.
And that's why the internet penetration, mobile usage, young people who are interested in this stuff, or is the government and kind of businesses they're interested as well?
A lot of younger people, yeah. Older people kind of, you know, it's like stuck in their ways. They really don't understand it yet.
Yeah.
But I think it's always us to, like, you know, change a mentality and change a cycle.
Has the government been embracing it, abrasive to it, or they're kind of agnostic?
They're not really embracing it as yet, but they're kind of understanding, you know, the movement and, like, making sure that they have some type of, you know, one skin in, one skin out in the game, like, of crypto. But they're seeing it being used, you know what I mean? I think Nigeria kind of, like, banded and unbanded and, you know, different things like that. But I know all my friends in Ghana, they're really, really, you know, advanced when it comes to crypto and Forex, for sure.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. Who are the most, like, successful or well-known Ghanaians in America? Like, if you had to pick two or three people, who do you think?
When you say, like, well-known, like, business individuals?
Business, music, movies, celebrity, just like, if they go back, people are like, we're proud that they are a Ghanaian.
I think mostly, like, the football players, a lot of, like, soccer players. But, like, I mean, to be honest with you, a lot of people are proud of, like, just, like, what, you know, because for me, myself, and, like, Michael Blackson, like, the people that's out here that's, like, Ghanaian, we always try to go back and, like, give back. You know what I mean? So anybody that's just going back and giving back, I think they're pretty, you know, they're pretty known
well
in Ghana.
Received.
Yeah, well received.
It's interesting because in America, like, we don't really think about Americans going and doing things in other countries with the same pride, maybe. Mm-hmm. We think about it in the sense of, like, sports, so Olympics, things like that.
Right.
But if we saw an American who was doing something crazy in London, people aren't like, hey, yo, that's American, right?
Yeah.
Right? But other countries, there's this, like, nationalistic pride that actually, in some ways, Americans should be, and many are, envious of.
Right.
In that when you have citizens that rally around, you know, we're more similar than different, I think it's such a powerful thing.
Yeah.
And it's almost one of the things I wish Americans had more, right? Like, we care about sports. We care about some of these aspects. Obviously, we just saw the Brittany Griner and Paul Whelan and this whole situation. Mm-hmm. But it's different. Right. When you talk to somebody from a Nigeria, Ghana, South Africa, whatever, like when they see somebody from their country go and do something great in the world, whether sports or not, they're like super proud. It's cool to see.
It's the culture that we live in and like how we are prideful from knowing where we come from and knowing that, you know, someone is in the Western world still representing like the country. Mm-hmm. I think that's where it comes from. And then like, you know, it's a huge, like, soccer, football, you know, their fans is super, you know, super in-depth of, like, just voting for their country. So I think that has a partake in that as well because we have, like, sports here where it's just, like, cities, they have, like, a country they're supporting. You know what I mean? Like, it's kind of, like, different if you think about it. Like, you know, it's like, okay, what's your favorite team? Okay, no, this is my soccer team. This is my country's team. You know what I mean? The Black Stars. So I think it's, you know, that has a major effect as well because they're, like, supporting their country.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, soccer is, like, the biggest sport out there. But, yeah, I think, you know, people are prideful and people, you know, they love to say that, you know, they're African, whether it's from Ghana, whether it's from Nigeria, whether it's from South Africa. But, you know, people don't even notice that Elon is South African. So like, people don't even know. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, and I think that the only time it ever comes up, whether fortunately or unfortunately, depending on how you view it, is people will crack jokes and say things like, oh, an African-American owns Twitter now or something,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And like, I get it, the internet culture or whatever. But there is this thing of like, whether you look at Elon, and he didn't come straight to America from South Africa. He went to Canada and the whole thing. There's many other entrepreneurs who have done something very similar. But also like the Fortune, I think it's the Fortune 500, I think is the grouping. 50% of the CEOs are immigrants, I think.
Yeah.
It's either that or it's of billion-dollar companies, 50% of the CEOs are immigrants. There's some metric. I'll get it wrong. And then if you actually look at like, you know, who runs some of these businesses, mm-hmm. like who's running Google? Who's running Microsoft, right? Mm-hmm. These are not American-born executives. These, mm-hmm. In many cases, recently has been people from India, but these are folks who came from outside of our country and came here.
Right.
Which if you look at the history of America, mm-hmm. like, well, hey, newsflash, motherfuckers, what y'all think been happening in America for, you know, 250 plus years, yeah, right? Yeah. People come from other places, coming here and doing awesome things. And so like it's more the trend line than mm-hmm. it is, you know, some outlier situation.
Right. I think the opportunity that when you come from a different country and you realize the opportunity that you can, you know, tackle out here, it makes you want to work way, way harder and smarter. Mm. And then you kind of understand that, you know, culturally, you kind of understand that you didn't have this opportunity in this country. So you have to make your all and your best when you have an opportunity in the Western world and vice versa, right? Whether it's American going back to Africa to do an investment, they know that they have the Western world, but it may not worked out. So when they go out there to figure out the opportunity in Africa, they put their all in.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what we're seeing as far as the transition for younger Americans, African descent.
Mm-hmm. It's fantastic. Where can we send people to find you on the internet?
PJ Kev, Instagram, Twitter is PJ Kev Approve, and my website is pjkev.com.
And if they're interested in Jets?
Jets, Approve Jets is my company. Charter at approve-jets.com.
Charter
at approve-jets.com.
Awesome, man. I appreciate you coming
appreciate
on.
Appreciate you. Appreciate you guys for having me.
I learn something every single time, so we're definitely bringing your ass back. I need more knowledge.
Information is key. Information is key. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much for listening to today's episode. I really hope you enjoyed this one. Make sure you're subscribed on Apple, Spotify, or your favorite podcast player. And if you're looking to transition into a brand new job in the Bitcoin or crypto industry, we've got you covered. Head over to thecryptoacademy.io. My team and I have been working with the top HR teams in the industry to develop an intensive 3-week training program with over 50 live events. We teach you exactly what you need to know to break into the industry, including live interview prep and resume review. Our students have been hired at over 75 of the world's best Bitcoin and crypto companies. Go to thecryptoacademy.io to learn more. Again, that's thecryptoacademy.io. If you enjoyed today's episode, make sure you share it with your friends, and I'll see you all for the next episode.